Working Cows Podcast, episode 190.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another episode for you guys, powered by the Global Ag Network. Very excited to be joined today by Craig Thompson and Gordon Decker. Craig is one of the founders of the Rockside Ranch in Etna, California, Northern California, and they are doing some lengthy recovery periods. I have been in ministry for about 14 and a half years right now. And one of the ministries that I was involved in, we had a very good relationship with a local recovery center. And there was a lot of people in the church where I was in ministry who worked in addiction recovery. And they said, as people who were recovering addicts and alcoholics themselves said, that oftentimes some of those short stay places are more like a spin dry, where you're just barely sober when you leave. And so to see something like Rockside Ranch, where it is a 8-month program where those guys come in, they get sober, but not only that, they get connected to the family of God through a local church, and they get some life skills, some trades training, some money management, and those kinds of things. So it's a big holistic person-wide vision that Rockside Ranch has, and some exciting new developments. Rockside Ranch has a new location in western South Dakota as well, near New Underwood. And so we're going to talk about, what is Rockside Ranch? What's the vision behind it? How does it work? What does a day in the life of one of the guys in the program look like? And how are they, what kind of fruit are they seeing from this? So really excited to be joined today by Craig Thompson and Gordon Decker of Rockside Ranch. Craig, Gordon, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir.
It's been good getting to know you just a little bit today, Craig. You've been involved with a ministry in California?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rockside Ranch, what's the goal? What's the model that you guys are following there?
Yeah, so Rockside Ranch is an 8-month residential program for young men who are in crisis, who want to get out of crisis, and who are willing to put in the hard work to get out of crisis.
What does that process look like? What is the hard work involved in that, and how are you guys approaching that?
Yeah, so the big first step is being willing to come to the program. So we're on a small farm in Northern California, pretty rural area, and a lot of the guys that are coming to the ranch, they've got to move there to get there. And so when they're willing to take 8 months and to move to somewhere that's totally unknown, that's a huge first step. And then to give it their best every single day, you know, for 8 months, getting up in the morning, going out and feeding animals, living in a house with a bunch of other guys, going through classes, and really just, you know, kind of putting down their desires in order to live a better life, to go where they want to go.
What's the goal for the guy kind of walking out 8 months after he's been there? What are you guys hoping is true for him?
Basically, I mean, the biggest thing is that they're hireable and can get a job, keep a job, move up, you know, in their workplace. So when they come to the ranch, they're in crisis, transitioning. Once they're at the ranch, they're getting equipped with the skills that they are looking for. And then when they leave the ranch, they're ready to step into a job and start to really thrive in both their life and their work.
How'd you get started doing this?
Yeah. So probably about 15 years ago, I started thinking about it. And my wife was really, she also had a similar vision. We weren't married at the time. And so it's really what brought us together. And then in 2010, we got married and shortly afterwards started to try to see this dream come alive. And the community that we're in is it's a small town in Northern California called Etna, about 700-800 people. And the whole Scott Valley community has just really been, they've embraced us and embraced this idea and have supported it, you know, from day one and really made all the difference.
And yeah, I talk about the importance of kind of that piece of having both you and your wife on the same page, because mm-hmm. this is not easy work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the idea that both of you kind of feel it or see it as a calling is, that's a big part or a big advantage, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then as the years have gone by, we've had staff come in and be involved and other people who said, hey, I want to be a part of this or I want to do this. And oftentimes there weren't jobs open for anybody to come and step in, but people came anyway and said, you know, we'll figure out a way to make this work. And so it has, you know, it was something that, yes, you know, the Lord really kind of gave me a picture of what this could be, gave my wife a picture of what this could be, gave this community that we live in a picture of what it could be, and then gave others, you know, and so it's just been this kind of multiplied vision and effort from so many people.
Walk me through the agricultural side of what you guys are doing there, the land and the animal side of what you guys are doing there.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're on 100 acres. It's split up about 30 pasture, 60 woods, and 10 acres of, you know, more infrastructure. The pasture right now is all dry land. And then in the woods, we've got pine cedars. We've got some oaks. And so we run our pigs through the woods. We raise about 150 or so pigs a year, run them through the woods. We raise chickens on the pasture. And so we've got a layer flock of anywhere between 12 and 1600, depending on the time of year. And we raise some meat birds and some meat turkeys also.
And what's the model or the paradigm of management with the animals? How are the pigs interfacing with the forest? How are the meat birds and the layers interfacing with the pasture?
Yeah. So it's all a pasture-based system, or, you know, for our pigs, they're all outdoor. And so the pigs really help, because when they go through the woods, they help with fuel reduction. Forest fire is a huge threat in our area. And so as pigs go through, they just take all of the understory down to the soil, and they're turning it up, turning it under. So we noticed that when the pigs have gone through an area the next year, we actually have grass growing in the forest, which is unusual for the forest where we are. And then on the pasture side with the chickens, the chickens are being moved every day to fresh ground. And so we're using kind of a hoop house coop design. And so the manure is falling right onto the soil. So we don't need to manage manure, because it's being, you know, used right where it needs to be. So. Mm.
And the pigs, are they impacting every acre every year, or are they on every acre every year?
No, they're not. We move them to different parts of the woods, and we only have pigs seasonally. So we really, you know, try to move them as much as we can. When they've chewed down an area, we move them to the next, and depends on the size of the group and the conditions and how long it's been since we've had pigs there before, of how long they'll be in one spot.
Mm-hmm. And so are you buying them as wieners? Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier, having a boar, in sows. So are you doing some?
We used a farrow.
Farrow to finish?
Yeah, we used to do that. And then we switched about 2 years ago to just buying wean pigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of a, just bring them in, get them to finish, and then you have to send them off to be butchered.
Mm-hmm.
They come home and go in the freezer, and they're sold out of the freezer then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And how have you developed that market?
Yeah, so it's been ongoing, and we have a good support from our local community, and then we go out and do deliveries throughout Northern California, and then we also will ship boxes anywhere in the West Coast too.
Sure. So I guess all of those questions kind of back to the bigger point of Rockside Ranch and its mission, primary mission being mm-hmm. kind of rehabilitating people. Yeah. Can you talk about how you've seen the process of seeing people work the land impact, you know, help that process of rehabilitation in those people?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest things is just the dignity that comes with mm-hmm. being outside and working with animals and producing food. And so, you know, we see in students when they go out there and day one, they come to the ranch and they go out and they collect eggs and they realize, I just collected 600 eggs. That's a lot of eggs. That's mm-hmm. going to feed a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so just that immediate connection to, wow, these hands just contributed something really special. Mm-hmm. And then when they even get to take those eggs and package them and then be a part of selling those eggs to a customer who then gives direct feedback on how, you know, they're going to take those eggs home and feed them to their family. There's just this real good feedback loop that's developed in farming. Mm. And for the guys to feel that and to feel that, you know, that at the end of the day, I'm tired and it's because I was contributing to the food supply, you know, in this country, albeit on a really small scale, but in a really transformational way. I think that's huge. Mm. And then just the really therapeutic elements of being around animals, right? Just the care that is required to take a chick from a day old chick to a full grown layer, and the fact that, you know, they're I love watching the guys go in to the brooder and they care about those chicks so much, and so they'll be building up the, you know, the wood shavings in the areas where the chicks are getting out and ushering these little baby chicks over under the heat lamp, you know, stuff like that, where you just see these characteristics of compassion and care for others at the time as animals, but then that translate to other people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think a lot of what you're just talking about is kind of not being the center of the universe anymore. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, especially guys in crisis, you know, you talked in the presentation that you gave here, and again, thanks for coming out and sharing the ministry with the guys that showed up today. It was a great presentation. And, you know, you talked about getting basic needs met, you know, and once they've got a few basic needs met, then they can start to think about, you know, dignity, value, and worth, which, you know, ultimately comes because we're made in God's image.
Yeah.
But when your day in, day out is spent in survival mode, you don't get to think about, you know, dignity, value, and worth. You don't get to think about work that matters. You don't get to think about any of those things.
Yeah.
And so when you have work that matters, part of it is, I'm not the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I'm contributing to something bigger than myself. I'm, you know, I myself eat two eggs, you know, fried in butter every morning.
Yeah,
free range eggs, fried in butter every morning. And, you know, and since I got my cholesterol and those numbers back recently, I cut out the bread.
Yeah,
the doctor said I should cut out the eggs. I said, I'm going to do like a little N equals one experimentation and cut out the bread and see how we do for this year. So I'll go back and try it. But anyways, it's a powerful protein source, eggs and, you know, and chicken and all those things. So, what's a day in the life of somebody at Rockside Ranch as a resident? What's a day in their life look like?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we get up and have a short devotion. They go out at 7 o'clock and feed animals for about an hour. Come back in at 8, have breakfast. From 9 to 10, we do a Bible study. From 10 to 1, we do projects. projects range from all kinds of different things, farm projects to trade projects to really just anything that's gonna train job skills. So that project time is kind of a workshop time. But then it's also a time where the guys can get exposed to different potential career paths. So if they enjoy one of the projects that we do in a specific trade, that's a signal to them of maybe this is something I can pursue. So that 10 to 1 slot is for farm projects or others. 1 to 2 o'clock, they have lunch. And then 2 to 4, they have class. Classes range anywhere from budgeting, financial management stuff, to resumes, to anger management or stress management or conflict resolution, just all kinds of life skills and job skills. And really, we look at the current group of guys that's there and say, you know, what is it that is going to really be beneficial? And we'll focus on that. 4 o'clock, they go back out and collect eggs, feed and water the animals. 4:30, we do a group workout. 5 o'clock, dinner, or break, actually. And then 6 o'clock is dinner. 7 o'clock to the end of the night is an evening session that's usually more social and casual.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. Their day is just super programmed from, you know, 6:30 in the morning all the way till 8, 9 o'clock at night. And there's that one break in the middle. Other than that, it's pretty back to back.
Yeah. How do you, is your family interfacing with them throughout the day? Are you eating is your family eating those meals with them, or is the staff taking care of the meal times with them? How's that?
Yeah. So it rotates around quite a bit. And depending on the day, we do an all staff and student meal, Tuesday dinners. And so that's a big meal, you know, with 30 plus people there usually. But throughout the day, yeah, everybody is just kind of coming and going. And so the different staff members are interacting at different times. My kids are always outside, you know, riding bikes and hollering at the guys, you know, hey, how you doing? And then we go into the house, you know, all throughout the day. So it's really, I mean, it is really community focused. And the relationship piece is such a big part of it. And then depending on the day and what's going on and where the guys are at, just you know, attitude wise, kind of depends on how much interaction takes place in what way.
Tell me about the community piece and the interface with a specific local church or the local church in general, at least in Aetna, where you guys are at.
Yeah. So, I mean, the partnership between our local church and the ranch and community there is essential. And we have such a huge support group, you know, from that church that really pours into the students, pours into the staff and just the whole ministry. So the guys go, we all go to church on Sunday morning together. Throughout the week, different church members stop by. I love it when the you know, church members just stop by unannounced, walk in. You know, sometimes they have a plate of cookies, which always goes over well. Other times they just want to sit down and talk and hang out. Sometimes they go out and, you know, pick up a shovel or a hammer and do something with the guys. But just that, like, just kind of casual environment that really goes to communicate a lot to the students too, of just, you know, the community wants to be involved. They want to love these guys. And so there's always a bit of a, when a new guy comes to the ranch, they're just trying to figure out, are these people trustworthy? Mm-hmm. You know, is this, are they looking out for me or not? And as staff, we're there every day and they see, hey, we're there regardless of if it's 10 o'clock at night and there's a need, or 6 o'clock in the morning and there's a need, somebody's going to be there to meet it. But when the community gets involved, that's a whole nother level of kind of commitment, you know, that they see these people, they don't have any reason to be here other than they want to, you know?
It's cool to see local church take ownership of it.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? They're bought in. They believe in the vision and they want to see it accomplish, you know, its end goal.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a typical
story that comes along with these guys from Rockside Ranch. I mean, I think of, I worked in the inner city of Milwaukee during Bible school in the rescue mission. We had a youth program where we would go out. It was kind of a old school model, but we would go out and bus in 100 to 200 kids two or three times a week and bring them in and, feed them in some cases. Some nights we were feeding them a meal, doing sports programming with them, doing Bible studies with them, stuff like that. So in a lot of those situations, kind of back to what you were saying, these guys are saying, are these people for real? Are they trustworthy? They'd never had anybody else look out for them. You know, it's always been me look out for me, and I don't trust anybody else around me. And so it's, you know, it's kind of a, I'm sure there's a process of them feeling out, you know, the people around and seeing, are they here for what they can get out of me? Or are they here to invest in me?
Mm-hmm.
So is there a typical story, or is it everybody's story is unique and different? And, what have you seen in the years you've been doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guys come from all kinds of different backgrounds too. And so it's really interesting, you know, to see some of the guys come with some real tremendous family support, and some of the guys, you know, and they've just found their way into a crisis of some kind. Some of the guys come from, you know, they've lost all contact with everybody that they've ever known, and they're really isolated and alone when they come to the ranch. But I think no matter what, when they come to the ranch, they are trying to feel like, are the staff trustworthy? And is this a place that is going to care about me? And then B, are these other guys trustworthy? Because here I'm sharing this house with them. And so for us and for the community at the ranch to really be trying to build up that brotherhood, you know, that when they step into this program, that this is a group that's not just looking out for each other individually, you know, where I'm looking out for me and you're looking out for you. And if mm-hmm. you win, I lose. So mm-hmm. I want to win, so you lose. Mm. But it's actually, we're you know, doing so much to try to build a culture where, no, if you win, we win and celebrate together, right? I mean, it's the whole idea of mourn with those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice, of just that we are trying to be that community,
right?
That I've been fortunate to have in my life at different times that has sustained me through difficulty. And if we can be that for those guys, it's a real neat thing.
Yeah. The word compassion literally means to suffer with.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. So you enter into their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then enter into their rejoicing as well, yes. You know? Yeah. So it's, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Gordon, you've been there, as a, you know, somebody who kind of just walked into it, not having been there on the ground for like Craig has. And so what did you see? What was your experience kind of coming in fresh?
Oh, thanks for asking that question. It was, so I originally went out there I was involved in the workforce program, which is a workforce development, the graduates of the Rockside Ranch, having a place where they can continue on in employment opportunities. And I went there to meet Craig. I've had great conversations with him, heard about the ranch. But when I went there and saw the church in action and saw the environment that they had created for these students and for the staff, it was such a loving, caring place. I just was amazed. And I just would have loved to have stayed there and gone through the program myself. and I was able to share the journey with another man from our community. And we just soaked it up. It was just amazing. And we just, the fellowship and the camaraderie is just off the charts.
Mm, very cool. So are they coming in all throughout the year? There's no like enrollment period or anything. You'll take anybody any day of the year for an 8-month stint.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now, which is kind of new for us in the last few years. We used to only run seasonally before we had a good facility for winter housing. And so now if we have spots and a guy calls up, we try to get them there as quick as possible, you know, within a week. There's a real narrow window when a guy's in crisis and they decide, hey,
right,
I want help. There's a real narrow window of either deciding, I actually don't want help, I'm going to do this on my own, or of finding help somewhere else. And if they find, you know, our goal is to set them up with somewhere that's successful for them. And if that's at Rockside, let's get you here as quick as possible. If that's somewhere else, that's fantastic. But what we don't want is for them to slide back into old habits and get out of a place where they want help, you know? Mm-hmm. And now that now they're back to square one.
And it's not at all fair to put you guys in the same category as a typical recovery ministry. But you know, we talked a little bit earlier today, or a lot earlier today, and I've been around recovery ministry and recovery programs, not necessarily ministries as well, and the success rate for that is pretty low. And you know, some of the people that had been through recovery and had made it through recovery successfully and had recovered from their dependencies would always tell me that. That typical recovery 21, 28 day program, whatever it is kind of like spin dry. Like you're just barely sober and then you're back out into the world, old friends, old patterns, old habits. And it's, you know, a matter of weeks before the same choices are made. And so, you know, you hear stats like 7 out of 10 people on the recidivism rate for, you know, both incarceration and recovery type stuff. And so with an 8-month program, first of all, do you have an idea of how many have been through the program, how many have graduated, so to speak, and then kind of what the, I don't know, for lack of a better word, success rate has been?
Yeah. So it's been really cool to see. I mean, the guys, when they are willing to do this full scale, you know, top to bottom life change, right? And they're willing to, first of all, leave the environment of crisis. And that's such a huge component of restoration, is getting out of that crisis environment. And then even better is after they've gone through the restoration part, to go to someplace new to really begin fresh. So when guys are willing to do that, the Lord really shows up and honors that. And so we've seen that the guys that have graduated from the ranch, it's over 80%, you know, it's right around like 83% or so of those guys are employed or in school right now. And so that's going back 9 years. And so, you know, for them to really see not only over a long period of time, over 8 months, that, wow, I can do this. I can get up every day and make my bed and go out and go to work and show up on time and come in and go through classes. And I mean, every single day is just building that capacity more and more to give full confidence when they graduate that I can do this, because I have shown myself for the last 8 months that I can do this, you know?
Yep.
And I think it makes all the difference. That time period is so essential. We used to try to say, okay, well, you could graduate a little bit early if you were at this stage, or and we just have learned over the years that 8 months is so critical.
Yep. Yeah, the Milwaukee Rescue Mission had a men's ministry program that was similar. It was an in-house deal, you know, kind of come in, cut ties, and spend, I don't know, I think theirs was a 6-month program or something, maybe, but great program. And basically they kind of always said our recidivism rate is the polar opposite, like 70% recidivism rate in recovery and in incarceration. We've had 70% guys, you know, years out of the program, still employed and still, you know, free. So it's when you're willing to take that time, when you're willing to invest that time, it is a huge piece of the success. And I think that, you know, where a lot of those guys were from Milwaukee, a lot of them coming into the homeless shelter for a period of time before they get into the men's ministry, then I think a lot of them end up back in Milwaukee to still see that level of success is pretty big, because those, like I said, those old friends and habits and patterns are so easy to get back into. So it's a testimony, I think, to this kind of model of ministry. Where are you guys? They're coming from all over, right? I mean, all over the United States.
Yeah.
And how are they hearing about the ministry? How are they hearing about the opportunity?
Yeah. Almost all of the guys that come to the ranch they're told about the ministry from somebody else, you know, so it's word of mouth. So usually it's a parent or grandparent or family member, somebody in their church, somebody who, you know, a teacher, somebody who's knows them and is invested in them and really cares for them personally and their restoration. And so, yeah, it's, I mean, I don't have exact numbers, but I would guess it's well over 80% of the guys who come to the ranch, were told about the ranch from somebody in their life that cared about them.
What's the, I mean, is this model, something you can replicate other places?
Yeah. And really that's the dream, right? Because we don't have a vision or a hope of growing the Aetna ranch to be serving 30, 40, you know, 100 guys. Our goal is to keep it really small. I mean, that's, I think, the essence really of that community is that you're known and that you are in relationship. And so the more guys that we get, the harder that becomes. But I think, you know, pairing it with a farm is such a beautiful thing because there's farms everywhere, you know, farms and ranches are all across this country. And wrapped up inside of every single one of those farms and ranches is this wisdom of the ages, you know, that is really, really beautiful and so needed by all of us. And so when you get a guy who's coming in, who's of the mindset of wanting to learn and take on new skills, and you bring him to a farm that is a wellspring of skills and of knowledge and wisdom, the two things just combine and it works really well. So can it be replicated? Yes. And that's really our goal, is to see this model replicated on farms and ranches anywhere in the country that a landowner really likes this idea, is willing to give a lot of time and energy to these guys, but is going to, on the other side of that, see lives restored and guys, you know, walking in freedom from their addictions and from their crises. And it's that's the hope.
Yeah. And you are actively pursuing an expansion of that. Of that kind right now, correct?
Yeah. So this would be the first of the next ranches, right? So we've had the ranch in Aetna for about 10 years. And so this next ranch would be the first time that we would be replicating the model. And so it's just something that's in the works right now in South Dakota here. And we are really praying about it and trying to go through the process of what that would look like. And so hopefully... pretty soon we'll be able to say it's happening.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily like a franchise model or anything like that, is it? I mean, what's the expansion model as far as Rockside is concerned and being connected to it? How does that work?
Yeah. So our thing is basically, I mean, we didn't make all this stuff up, right? This has been heavily led by the Lord, and so it's not ours to keep. So as we've gone through and talked about expanding or equipping other farms with what we've learned, our goal would be to minimize the replication of mistakes that we made, right? And just maximize the getting the program off the ground as quickly as possible. Mm. And so it would really depend on a farmer or rancher and what they're looking for. If they say, hey, I want to keep farming and ranching, but I'm okay with using my land for this purpose, then maybe it turns into Rockside Ranch, South Dakota, on a piece of ground that is owned by a farmer or rancher here. Or if there's another farmer and rancher somewhere else who says, I want to use this model, but I want to keep it kind of in mind, our family farm name or anything like that. Great. Like, sure. That's not important, you know, to us. What the overwhelming need of restoration for guys in crisis is, it seems endless, right? Mm-hmm. I'd love it to end.
Right.
And so it's only going to end when this type of a thing is happening coast to coast.
Right. Yeah.
If I could just add a little color. Absolutely. On that, I would say my background is law enforcement and military. And I, in 20 years, I saw a lot of men in crisis. And I really never had a heart until I accepted the Lord about 8 years ago to really understand what was causing the crisis and how to address that. Mm. And having seen the model that Rockside Ranch has and the way they're doing this, once I toured that facility in January, I was like, this needs to start in Western South Dakota somewhere, and it could start all over the nation in multiple places. And I just don't see, I see so many opportunities for men to have that opportunity to grow and to learn life in a different way. And that's part of my testimony too, is when I was a teenager, my dad was in the Air Force and I grew up on Air Force bases and I didn't have a chance to be on a farm until a neighbor friend started taking me to a farm and teaching me skills that I wouldn't have had an opportunity to learn. And so now this opportunity kind of come back to agriculture, and what I miss from law enforcement military is the camaraderie. And that's what Rockside is creating, is that shared relationship, that relational ministry of, I want to share life with you. I truly care about you. And I want you to be the man that God created you to be. Mm. And so you're creating space for God to work in that. And you're showing what the church truly is. And that's what's just so powerful once you've experienced that.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the practicalities of actually seeing this replicated around the country. We're talking to ranchers from all over America and some quite a few outside of America too. But you know, what you mentioned, kind of a piece of land, a rancher with a heart to see this happen, some facilitators, funding. Kind of walk me through, what's it take to get a guy through the program, you know, from the, you know, a task for them to do, you know, but also from a monetary perspective, what's that kind of take? What are you guys looking at for an investment, and how is that funding happening?
Yeah. So the funding for the program really comes from a large part is individual donors. So people who believe in the guys, believe in what's happening at the ranch. And so they want to be a part of that. So almost, I mean, we're over 60% of our revenue is coming from outside supporters. Some of them have never met the guys. Some of them are related to past students and who want to pay that forward. You know, for us right now, well, residential ministry is incredibly expensive. Most rehabs that are out there, and we're nowhere near this, but most rehabs are $7,500 a month. And so it's prohibitive, you know? And so here we're talking to guys who are on the streets sometimes, have nothing, or who are coming from a place where they have family support or other things. So we try to keep our costs down as much as we can, but it's still very expensive. So we don't bill for our services. What we do is we just have a conversation with family and we say, hey, this is how much it costs us per student to run this program. What do you think you can or can't contribute? We don't talk about that with the student at all, because they're usually looking for a reason not to come, right? They're really apprehensive about investing that much time in a restoration program. So on top of that, if there's a big monetary investment, then they go, okay, A, I'm not worth that. Or B, you're going to put all that money into this program, and then I'm going to go out and I'm going to fail, and it's going to be a waste. So they're not in a place of really believing that they have what it takes to change. So we don't have those conversations with the students at all. We talk with families. They give us what they can afford. And we don't take finances into account when we accept a student. So regardless of what they are able to contribute, if they're a good fit for the program, we feel like the Lord is saying this is a good guy to bring on, he's coming to the ranch. Mm. So how that would replicate over, you know, when we're talking to this potential partnership in here in South Dakota, what we're saying is, listen, you know, do you want to start a nonprofit that would oversee this, or do you want to come under this existing nonprofit, Rockside Ranch, that could do a lot of the fundraising, administrative stuff, and try to be as efficient as possible in the replication? And so that's, I think, the best way to go. You know, running a nonprofit is a lot of paperwork, and it's not necessary that everybody do that. Mm-hmm. But any way that Rockside could be a support to the landowner and to the potential site, we're all in for. And so that could look as little as, hey, here's the program that we run. You know, call us if you need anything. or it could look as involved as, no, we're actually overseeing the ministry and you're overseeing your farm, which is something you've always done and are really good at. We're not going to be good at running your farm, but would it help if we ran the nonprofit side of things?
And if I could just add on to that too, because it's been an evolution, and we are the first expansion opportunity for First Rockside Ranch here in South Dakota. And as we've been working through this, it's not the amount of acres that you need. It's the space that you need for the men to live in community and to have enough projects and things that they can do to experience job and life skills that they wouldn't get otherwise. So just to add on to that, it just doesn't, it's not a certain amount of land. It's just a space to be able to do this is what I see as the need.
Yep. What percentage of the caloric intake for the critters at Rockside Ranch actually is produced by Rockside Ranch? I mean, it's grass and, and those things. Is it, you're raising two critters that don't really convert grass a lot. You know, they get a lot of supplemental feed. So are you buying in a lot of feed for them?
Yeah, we do. We buy in a lot of grain, both for the chickens and the pigs. This year we're getting lambs in a few weeks. And so as the pasture health improves, then we'll start to bring on some more grass eaters.
Some ruminants.
Yeah.
I guess that question, you know, that I'm asking is more about the nature of the work that those guys are doing and the fact that it doesn't necessarily have to be kind of back to that idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bunch of acres necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's more about they're having these everyday chores and tasks. And then, you know, I think what you said earlier, maybe 2 hours of their day is spent on chores. And then maybe another 2 hours of their day is spent on ranch related, you know, infrastructure projects or whatever. And then really the rest of their day is pretty well programmed for them from the time they get up to the time they go to bed around, connection or opening the opportunity for a connection with Jesus and life skills.
Yep.
Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that Egg Layers is such a cool, part of the program because it's that daily feedback cycle, right? So when for our pigs, for instance, it's months long. And so there are some guys who come in and they don't see the beginning and the end of the hogs. But with the chickens, with the layers, they're going out and collecting eggs every single day. And so I think that that's a really neat enterprise to stack on top of an existing enterprise. They don't take up that much space. They don't require that much land, and it can really stack on top of especially cattle farms, cattle ranches, and it can really...
You get east of the 100th Meridian, their farms again, so okay, don't worry about it.
Good deal. but just, to stack that on top of an existing operation can work really well.
Yeah. I have interviewed guys from, let me see, five or six continents and five continents. I haven't interviewed anybody in South America yet. But anyways, I interviewed a guy from England and I introduced him as running a ranch.
Yeah.
And all the guys from England commented on that post laughing, saying this is a farm, it's not a ranch. So yeah, the terminology, it's tough with all different parts of the world.
Yeah.
But you talk about Egg Layers, they are they're fantastic critter for sanitizing pastures as far as they love to be two or three days behind a set of cows, cleaning up manure, eating all the bugs out of that manure. And they break that parasite cycle that you are a lot of times fighting with your ruminant animals. And they are doing very well with that. They're producing healthier, more nutrient dense food as a result of being on a diet of manure and grain. Yep.
Yeah.
And amazing. On top of all that, it's like you said, a daily feedback loop. And I just think it's, like you said, farming, ranching is the perfect, perfect enterprise for somebody who has been in crisis, who has been in survival mode, who has been in a mode of, I'm the center of the universe. If I don't look out for me, nobody else is going to kind of open up their world and see I'm contributing directly to the food chain, you know, to the food cycle. And again, layers are just another unique or one of the more unique critters that does that every day. Yes. Yeah. And so that's been cool. How did you land on this style of farming?
Yeah. Well, so where we are, we're in a pretty remote part of Northern California, it's Siskiyou County, you know, about 45,000 residents in Siskiyou County. So there's not a big population center to do a lot of direct to consumer marketing. So there's some farmers markets and other things, but, I started working up there, at a kids camp, called Kidder Creek. And so I was there, for a few years before Jen and I got married. And then we started seeing the wheels turn on this ranch idea and dream. And so, when we first started Rockside, I went to work for a cattle ranch that's, just down the road from us, and they were doing a lot of direct to consumer. And so as we interacted with people, they were saying, "Hey, there's great beef around here. Do you know of any chicken or any pork?" Mm. And so what everybody had been asking us when we bought 100 acres of land is, what on earth can you possibly do with 100 acres of land? Mm-hmm. And turns out you can run a lot of pigs and quite a few chickens on 100 acres. So it really fit both the market demand at the time and also the size of our pasture and our land to run these animals that weren't really being run up there at the time.
I heard this quote the other day, we all know the quote, a jack of all trades, a master of none.
Yeah.
But then the rest of the quote that many people don't hear is, better than a master of one is, yeah. You know, and I think that in agriculture, we have become masters of one task, you know, beef. We produce beef. We produce corn and soybeans. We produce, you know, whatever. And I was just sitting around a table on a Wednesday night with a guy here at church one night, and he said, you know, when I left to go to Korea, to go to the mm-hmm. Korean War, he said, everybody had chickens, hogs, cows, a milk cow. They were, you know, on a 5 to 7 year crop rotation, mm-hmm. you know, and this is in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And then he said, and by the time I got back from the surface, it was all corn and soybeans. Mm. And this was in Iowa.
Okay.
You know, and that was kind of would become indicative of the rest of the agriculture in America. And I think that, you know, that model, like you said, you're just meeting a market demand, but that model of reintegrating a diverse set of species mm-hmm. is a model, you know, we're leaving a lot of money on the table by not having a chicken on every acre of, yeah. of farm and ranch land in America. We're leaving a lot of money on the table by not having a pig on the acres they're suited for, you know, especially those forested acres, you yeah. know? And so I think that there is a lot of opportunity. Would you ever see something like this being sustainable on the money it could produce from the agricultural enterprises, or is it always going to take some investment out from the outside?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. And it's something that at the beginning, that was our plan, was to say, no, the farm's going to support the ministry. But then we realized that the whole model of ministry is taking somebody who at the time is not employable, getting them to a point as quickly as possible where they are, and then sending them off and helping them find a job. And so we realized at the very beginning, we were a for-profit farm. And then we said, okay, we probably should start a nonprofit ministry. And then we quickly, in about 3 years later, decided, you know what, we need to have everything from the for-profit absorbed into the nonprofit. For us, it was a question of, you know, who's driving this train, you know, and is it the farm that's driving the train? And if it is, then we aren't going to have time for mm. every crisis that comes up every day. And we're going to have to say, you know what, we're going to talk about that later. Let's get back to work. Sometimes we do that anyway, mm. because it's the best. But when the ministry is driving the train, then the farm is really the venue for life change. And we can flex a lot more to meet specific demands and needs of the students. And that's really what we're there for. And so is it possible? Yeah, I do think it's possible. It's even more possible in the second phase of the program So after they get the restoration program, then they can graduate into the workforce program. And this, so just, you know, a quick overview that the restoration program focuses on mental health. So stabilizing mental health, sobriety, and job and life skills. And so once they've gone through that restoration program, we haven't done our job if they're not hireable. So they need to be hireable, and we make sure that they have a job lined up before they leave. So they can choose to go on under the umbrella of Rockside into the workforce program as an independent adult. So when they come to Rockside, they choose to lay down their cell phone, their laptop, their headphones, you know, for 8 months and go all in on life restoration. They can choose to stay in the workforce program for up to 4 more years after they graduate, but they're fully independent. So they have their car, they've got their cell phone, they're living their life, but they're getting that housing, employment, and the community support that is so important to continued success. So once they are hireable and once they've graduated from the ranch restoration program, for them to go on and work for a farm that is for profit and is a great fit.
Along those lines, just first real quick, I wanted to say, one of the things that really stood out to me is what Craig said about they never take focus off the priority, that it's the ministry to the men, not the production of the farm. Mm-hmm. And so they're always reminding themselves, remember, we're here to minister to men and we're using the farm as a tool for that. And then what I've seen in Craig and the Rockside Ranch model that is just amazing is the follow through, the pathways, creating pathways that, hey, if this is really the life you want to live, here's a pathway for you to live that life. And they've already been doing it, but they stay in contact and they want to continually stay in contact. So we've even been talking about an alumni association where we never break fellowship. You know, it doesn't matter where you live or where you go on to, keep us updated. Tell us what's going on. Keep us informed, you know, stay in contact with us. So because a lot of treatment programs I've seen, you graduate and you're back in the world and they just don't have the capacity to stay in relationship with you. And I think that's where I've seen myself, a lot of men struggle, is they go back to the same neighborhoods, the same friends doing the same things. And then they're back in treatment before you know it, or in a worse situation than they were before. So this is a clear pathway, this ranch model, then the workforce program, and then an alumni association that says, we want to stay in contact with you for life. If you want to stay in contact with us.
Mm-hmm. I got so many more questions, but we're short on time here. But what's success look like for you in the life of these guys?
Yeah. So our big goals for them are that they would be employable day one. As soon as they graduate, they've got a job lined up. Of course, we want to see them continue to live a sober life. But our ultimate goal is that they have grown closer to Jesus while they've been at the ranch. So all of the other things are important for their success in their life, but their eternal success, right? Their eternal relationship with God is what we are hoping is cultivated more than anything else over the 8 months.
So Craig's getting ready to cash it in for the day. What is a day that you look back on and say that was a good day? What does it look like? What are some of the things that have happened in that day that make you thankful to be part of the ministry?
Yeah. So I think that a day with a lot of good, healthy conflict is a day that I look back on and think, man, that was a good day. It might sound weird, but you know, it's kind of like when you're moving animals, you know, that there's that pressure, right? Without pressure, the animals aren't going anywhere. But without a release, they're going to bust out of their fences. And so, you know, that's how I've been challenged to grow in my life, is that I've had people who've come around me, who've pressured me to say, hey, you know, either, hey, this is a warning flag that I don't really like what I'm seeing here, so you should look at this, or, hey, I really think that you can grow in this area and I want to walk with you through it. And that involves conflict, right? It's life on life. It is day in and day out. It's relationships. It's not always, you know, clean and pretty, right? But so when a guy, I think that one of the times that is pretty often, you know, and pretty common that happens is when a guy just pops off at you, you know, and says a bunch of stuff, and then you sit there and take it and say, thanks for sharing that with me, you know, let's either take a breather here or let's talk about it. And then they're willing to come back and talk about it. And it's those conflict points that really, I think, I mean, and there's parallels to farming in everything, right? But it's like, you got to disturb the ground before you're going to see new growth. Mm-hmm. And so as that ground is disturbed, the ground is going, ouch, you know, what's going on? But that's just like us, right? It's, that kind of promotion that needs to take place, that takes place before there's new growth. And so I've really come to love that healthy conflict, and not try to provoke it, you know, every day and poke people. But when it comes, is to just even stop in the moment and say, like, hey, this is really good. Like, it's really good that you're telling me these things. It's really good that you are being willing to yell at me, even, you know, and then we're going to walk through it together. I think that some of the days that I look back on and, you know, even get emotional about are the ones where a guy did something and assumed that they were going to get kicked out. Mm-hmm. And so whether they hit a wall or they, you know,
like put their fist through a wall.
Yeah, yeah. Fortunately, we haven't had anybody go through one yet. But yeah, where they, you know, they did something or they threatened somebody, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. Our one of our rules is that you can't be at the ranch if you're a physical safety risk to yourself or others. But sometimes a guy will make a comment here or there that it crosses the line, but isn't way over the line. Mm-hmm. And so when they just assume, all right, I'm getting kicked out. And then when we go and sit down with them and say, we're not kicking you out. Mm. Do you want to be here? And are you ready to go make that right? Mm. And they say, yes. Mm. I got all the time in the world for that. Mm. You know,
it's pressure and release, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like you're talking about, they're putting pressure on you. Mm-hmm. And then when they back that pressure off and realize he doesn't reciprocate.
Yes.
He doesn't come back at me. He doesn't kick me out. Mm-hmm. They're starting, just like a cow that's been had bad training in mm-hmm. pressure and release, mm-hmm. you know, they're starting to learn, oh, this is a different breed of person. You know, yes. I mean, that's hopefully that's what Jesus came to do, right? To
yeah.
give us a new way to be human, right?
And that's right.
A new old way to be human. And so, yeah, that's really cool. So again, we could do this a lot longer, but I do want to make sure that we don't let go without getting answers to a couple of questions. First of all, how can somebody get involved financially? Somebody wants to leave their nets and come work with Rockside Ranch. How can they do that? So yeah. Let's answer those two questions first.
Yeah. So, I mean, thanks for asking that. The best way would be to send an email to me. My email address is Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at rocksideranch.org. Our website is rocksideranch.org. And so, you know, feel free to go on there. It's been unbelievably amazing to me to see how many people have come to support this ministry and literally make it possible through donations. There's a way to give on our website. And I think that the most beautiful thing about that is that it's the body of Christ at work, you know, that we as a staff at the ranch know this literally would not be possible without so many other people coming alongside us. And so the people that give, the people who volunteer, the people who pray and share about the ministry, refer students, every single one of those people is being used by God to restore lives. And so, yeah, our website is kind of the hub for all of that. And then, yeah, feel free to send me an email personally.
Sure. And the replication piece, I mean, I think we're maybe a little early on that to give many specifics, but what's next? What do you need to make that? If you do land on this place that you're looking at, what are some of the immediate needs that are going to be there to help that go? Are you going to need staff more than what you've got interested already, or are you going to be able to make it work with who you have interested in already?
Yeah. So we will need a few more staff in order to make this new site work. And so we have short-term and long-term staffing positions. So short-term would be, you know, a single guy who wants to live in the house with the students for the 8 months. And so those are called program leads, and they're more internship level positions where that's a high intensity position. And so it's short-term. Mm. And then if there's anyone who would be interested in more of a long-term position, I mean, there's, as we kind of build capacity, there's just, I would have never guessed that we would have had this many staff that we have right now. And so as we build capacity and kind of venture into new areas, there's going to be more and more staff positions. Mm. And the staff that we have right now is outstanding. I mean, just phenomenal. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons that the guys, A, trust the program, but B, that they have long-term success is that, I mean, staff come in every day and say, I was just on the phone with this guy who graduated months and months ago, you know? And so those relationships just continue. And so it's a high intensity job, but if it's a job that, you know, you're interested in, somebody is interested in, then I guarantee you the reward is well worth it. Yeah. So
I've been in pastoral ministry for almost 15 years now, and I say the pay ain't great, but the rewards are out of this world.
Exactly.
Yeah. I got one more follow-up question on that. And I don't, this is going to sound weird no matter how I phrase it, so I'll just say it the way it came to my mind. Is there a resume that somebody would be trying to build that Rockside Ranch would be a good internship place to go and get some of those?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. So pastoral ministry, any sort of counseling ministry, social work, all of those types of fields, I mean, this is boots on the ground, right? I mean, living in the same house with the students day in, day out. The program leads are primarily the ones who are there in the evenings with the guys during their evening session. And then on the weekends, they go out and take the guys on adventures and excursions. So we've been really, really benefited by the fact that we're down the road from this adventure camp, because at the end of the summer, we are able to go and ask any of those guys if they're interested in coming on staff at Rockside, and they're a great fit. So, you know, if you've been a camp counselor and you enjoy that, it's a pretty good segue to come and be a program lead.
And would somebody be able to have a 9-to-5 and then come and be a program lead in the evenings and the weekends?
We have had guys who've had jobs offsite, and it does work, but it's one of those things where we want to talk to them ahead of time and say, you know, normally your weekends are for rest and rejuvenation. Are you sure you want to give up your weekends to a very intense, calling here? So
I just wanted to add too, that I think it's really good for somebody that wants to learn about regenerative agriculture or holistic management. You know, you're doing ministry in agriculture. Mm. So if it's that person that wants to have that opportunity, there's so many people that don't know where their food comes from or how things work. Yeah. And you could learn a lot of both in a setting like this.
And the second thing would be, if you ever want to be a parent, this is great, great hands-on experience, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. No, my wife and I have been heavily involved in Farm Bureau and, you know, at the state level anyways, and all the way to the top of that organization, even on the national level, the name of Jesus is mentioned often, the name of every prayer. First of all, the meetings are opened and closed in prayer. The meals are opened in prayer. All those prayers are in the name of Jesus at the end, you know. And I think a lot of that goes back to a connection to the land will generally foster a connection to Jesus, you know, for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which is there are very few steps between you and God's provision. Like, you need that rain, you know, you need him to do the things that he designed this world to do, so that you can continue to survive. Whereas the guy that just goes to the grocery store and throws lettuce in the cart, you know, he doesn't, there's a lot of steps there. And that's that chain. There's always lettuce at the cart. There isn't always grass in the pasture, you know, and sometimes there's a hiccup in that cart, but the chain is big enough that that supply chain is never, almost never broken. I mean, COVID tested that a little bit, but
right, yeah.
But and it did foster that curiosity for a lot of people. Where does my food come from? But anyways, I think like we've said multiple times, that agriculture is just a perfect deal for this. So
yeah,
we got to let you guys go. Anything we missed? Any big major nuggets that you wanted to talk about, or anything that?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, the only other thing would be, you know, if anybody's ever interested in coming out to the ranch, we love to have visitors. Yeah. And so, we're in a place in California that's on the way to nowhere. So, so if you ever want to make it a destination, you know, trip, give us a call.
Yeah, it's on my bucket list to be there for a Tuesday night community dinner sometime with my family.
So. Every week, you're always welcome.
I'll let you know before I show up.
Good deal.
Well, Craig and Gordon, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Really excited about that. Show notes page for today is workingcows.net/190. Workingcows.net/190 is the show notes page for today. So there will be links to Rockside Ranch and to some videos that they've produced and a little bit more about that and how you can get involved. So pretty neat opportunity. I would encourage you to pray for them and their ministry and their endeavors, and to partner with them if you feel so led, whether that's getting involved at one of the ranches or partnering with them financially. And there will be links for all of that at the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/190. Coming up next week on the podcast, we'll be talking with Leanne and Chelsea Schaefer. They are fifth and sixth generation on a farm, feedlot, cow-calf, feed dealership in central North Dakota. And we're going to talk to them just about, you know, the complexity of managing a generational ranch and some of the how they're incorporating new technology like performance beef and how that's helped them be successful. So look forward to that coming up next week on the Working Cows podcast. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.